This podcast is a proud member of the New Jersey Podcasters Association.
Haunted New Jersey Podcast number 12 for January 24th, 2006. Hello and welcome to the 12th episode of the Haunted New Jersey Podcast. We are your hosts, Garrett Husbeth, and by Skype tonight,
Brent Dolan.
What's up, man?
Nothing, man. This is so weird.
I know. Isn't it weird? It's kind of cool, but it's weird. I mean, we've both been so busy. My workload's been just atrocious this week. We just didn't have time to get in and into the studio. But, you know, at least we can Skype now.
Yeah, I'm actually in my bedroom doing a podcast, and it's almost kind of creeping me out.
Yeah, I'm in my office and at the house, so it's very cool, though. Well, we did a phone interview, or I did a phone interview with Al Rauber, our third partner, and our friend parapsychologist Pam Heath Sunday night, and we're going to play that for you tonight. And Pam, you know, everybody is going to get to know Pam and find out her background and what she's working on. And so, and after we get through a few initial points, we'll go ahead and play the interview. So, I wanted to ask you, Brent, how the vidcast is coming.
Vidcast is going good. I just spent another hour and a half on it.
So, is that about 12 hours so far?
No, it's probably about a total of 5.5 hours. It's taken me a little longer. Hopefully, I'll be able to stream it a little better.
Okay.
The audio sounds fantastic, good, though, because we're running it through the board.
Right.
And the edits are really tight. I'm going to have to probably search the web a little bit for some extra photos that I don't have, but we'll keep that between.
Yeah, I probably have some photos here of that. We did the vidcast, the first vidcast on the old Bernardsville Library in Bernardsville, New Jersey, that investigation. So we'll. I think I have some photos lying around that I could get to you.
Yeah, the intro came out great. I mean, it's a lot better than we expected, because we were struggling through it for a little bit, and then we just basically were like, screw it, we're just doing it, and it came out fantastic. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a little bit more work, editing work, I think, than you had initially thought, right?
Yeah, I always underestimate things. That's why I make no money.
So, how long is it going to be? About 20 minutes, did you say?
It looks like right now, the content I have is about 16 minutes, so I guess I'm aiming around 18, 20 minutes.
Okay, because we are going to have a couple commercials in there, because we do have to pay some bills.
Yeah, it's basically covering what we are putting into it. So.
What we're losing on a weekly basis. But last week we dumped about another $600 into podcasting, so, yeah. And,
yeah, but don't worry, we'll lose it up in volume.
Yeah, we will, won't we? So I also hear that you're a master sergeant now on Counter-Strike Online?
No, not Counter-Strike, Battlefield 2.
Oh, Battlefield 2.
Yeah, I'm a first-class master, fill in the blank, sergeant.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, you're beating up on a lot of 8- and 9-year-olds, I guess.
Oh, right? Man, these kids, it's like easy pickings. I just sit there with a sniper rifle, they walk by, boom, right in the head. It's yes. History class.
To those new listeners, Brent and I are both derelict. Gamers.
Yeah, it's a video game junkies.
Yeah, which I'll be playing a little Call of Duty after we do this intro tonight, too. So, what I wanted to get to quickly before we play the interview with Pam Heap is last week we had talked about the new Frapper map we have up, and a bunch of people signed up, and we appreciate it. We got some people from Europe, some people from Canada, a lot of people from the United States. So if you go to our site at hauntednewjersey.com, down at the bottom, there's a link to the Frapper map. Please sign it, because we'd love to hear from everybody, and we'd like to know where everybody is.
Yeah, Yeah, it's basically like a message board on steroids.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's great. I have so much fun just checking it out and seeing where our listeners are, because we're home in New Jersey, and there's nobody from New Jersey.
No, there's a couple of people from New Jersey, but it's cool because there are people from all over the place. We got Wayne in Jacksonville, Patrick in St. Paul, Minnesota, William in Edmonton, Alberta, Mike P. in Coraopolis, Pennsylvania, Emerald in Ontario, Chuck in Toledo, our friend and fledgling EVP researcher, Jeff Hahn in Astoria, Queens, Jonas in Sweden, Mike in Shrewsbury, England, Missy in Newport News, Virginia, Sal in Norristown, PA, James Stratman in Los Angeles. I've been in contact with James before. Our friend Penny Zingery, who's an investigator, a paranormal investigator in the Houston area, Jeff Vita, and Bum Loudson in Stockton-on-Tees, England. So, hello to everybody. Thank you very much for signing the map.
You forgot one guy, EastCoastSurfer.com guy is on there, too.
Is. I don't know who that is.
I think he's a spammer.
Yeah, he's a spammer. Some derelict. Surf bum.
Nice.
So please, you know, go sign the map if you're listening to us, if you happen to stop by the site. We really appreciate it. Another point is, last week we talked about the Skype number we have. That number is 973-968-5131. 973-968-5131. Please go there and feel free to leave us a message if you just want to say hello. We'd also like to hear of any experiences you've had with the paranormal, hauntings, or ghosts, and if it's something that warrants, you know, further investigation, so to speak. We may want to do a phone interview with you for the podcast, so feel free. If you just want to say hi, leave a message, or tell us your stories or about your experiences, we'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, that sounds great. That would be something
that'd be cool, right?
Yeah, I'm telling you, like, even just having you and Al do it, interviewing the person or listening to what they have to say would be fantastic.
It would be great. And, you know, we get a lot of these stories from people, really interesting stories and accounts of people's paranormal experiences via email, and now we could get them, you know, actually interview these people all over the world. I wanted to read a couple of emails real quick, too. And these pertain to the Meek tapes we played, which we got a lot of feedback, you know, both positive and negative, which is fine. So, dear Haunted and Jay, first off, love the show. I wait with anticipation for each new edition and enjoy contemplating the paranormal ramblings of your crew. I heard some of the criticisms that you referred to in your second edition on ITC. I'm a bit skeptical myself, but always open to these concepts, otherwise I wouldn't be listening. But I was curious why those who have died and are communicating with through SpiritCom would be so incredibly vague about the nature of the afterlife, and why those who are using SpiritCom wouldn't press to get some information beyond talking about what time of day it was or what kind of foods the spirit enjoyed. As I'm not well-versed in complete transcripts, I thought I would ask if their conversations transcend beyond the mundane interactions and actually get into the nature of the afterlife. And thanks for the wonderful and fascinating work you do. Sincerely, Peter Anderson in Raleigh, North Carolina. And Peter brings up a good point. And a couple other people had also mentioned, why were these recordings with Doc Mueller, the spirit communicator, and William Bill O'Neill so vague? You have to understand that I can't answer your questions. I don't know why they would be so vague, but these were just excerpts of over 20 hours of recordings that they made over a three-year period with these unseen entities. So it was up to Mr. Meek what he was going to use in this companion tape, which was a companion, the tape, to a publication he made, The Miracle of Living Forever, which is available online at Mark Macy's site, worlditc.org. So I may put a link in the show notes, which is you can find at blog.hauntednewjersey.com. To go and read, because he gets into much more detail about his work in the publication. So again, we have to remember that these are only excerpts of over 20 hours of conversation. Other than that, Peter, I don't know Mr. Meek. I never met him. He died before, you know, I ever had the chance to. So I can't answer your question, unfortunately. Here's a second one. This is from Sal. A great podcast this week. The jury is still out on the Dr. Meek tapes, but I'm keeping an open mind. I live out in Montgomery County, PA, not far from Valley Forge Park. Did you guys ever investigate the park? I'm thinking about taking a digital recorder out there and snoop around. It's amazing. No, have you ever been to Valley Forge, Brent?
No, I've had actually, isn't there a Valley Forge Academy there?
Yeah, there's a military academy there.
I have a really good friend of mine that actually graduated from there.
Okay.
So I should ask him some questions. That's funny, I actually was with him today. But,
oh, really?
Yeah, I never come across any of that stuff when I'm actually in real time.
Sal, I've never even actually been to Valley Forge. And we have wanted to get there. I've been to a couple other Revolutionary War sites and French and Indian War sites in western Pennsylvania with Al, where we did some recordings and got nothing. But I think some people know, or a lot of people may know, that I'm like an amateur historian, as is Al, and I do a lot of work with local historical societies. And I'm especially interested in this point in American history, the Revolutionary War period. So we do hope to get out to Valley Forge sometime in the near future. Not that I've ever heard that it's haunted, but you never know. It'd be interesting from a historical standpoint as well as a paranormal research standpoint. But, Brent, you know, we are supposed to go to Gettysburg to film an episode of Ghost Stories in, I don't know, Ryan, our producer, was saying May.
Wow, cool.
Before you get married, like a couple weeks before you get married.
That'd be cool. Sounds good. A trip before I take a real trip.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the trip of, what is that, the journey of life, they call it or something? I don't know.
I don't know if you want to call it that, man.
Yeah,
I had it out with my wife tonight. We don't fight a lot, but when we do, man, woof. I had a bad day.
It raises the dead.
Yes. All right. Okay. Go to hauntednewjersey.com, everyone, sign the contact form on our slate, and you'll get some free stuff. You'll get at least a 5-inch oval Haunted New Jersey sticker that Brent made. It's our logo.
And they're professionally made.
They're really
vinyl.
Nice. Yeah, vinyl stickers. Slap them on your laptop, slap them on your neighbor's car.
On your SUV.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. And also, next week, on the 1st of February, we're doing a joint podcast with Gene and Brian from the Hometown Tales podcast. Check them out at hometowntales.com. Good friends of ours and also members of the New Jersey Podcasters Association.
Yeah, I can't wait till that one. Yeah. That's gonna be a hoot.
And that'll be in the studio.
Yeah, that's gonna be fantastic.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
At least we'll be able to look at people when they're talking.
Right,
it's definitely strange. I'm really not a phone person.
No, I'm not either. I'd rather be looking someone in the eye.
Or typing an email.
That's
one or the
true.
Other.
Yeah. So next week, I don't know if those guys are giving anything away, but we're going to be giving away. We're not having a drawing tonight because I'm just too tired and I didn't get my act together to get everybody's names together. But we're going to be giving away Creative Labs MUVO, I think it's pronounced, which I think I have right in the drawer here. Here it is. And this is brand new. It's a Nomad MUVO, MUVO MP3 player and USB 2.0 flash drive, 128 megabytes holds, 4 hours of music. And I have one of these and I love it. I replaced my iPod with this.
Now, is there any way we can fix this so I can get it?
You never know.
No? Yeah, I'm going to put my name in tomorrow.
You put one of your relatives' names in. Nothing like a good rig giveaway.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's
only on
a
New Jersey podcast.
Unfortunately, we don't do that, but it would sound like a good scam.
I got to say, before we go, it's got nothing to do with ghosts, but it's got everything to do with technology, which we're also all about. I picked up a pocket PC phone today, a PPC 6700. It runs Windows Mobile 5.0. This thing is amazing. You saw it, right?
Yeah, dude.
Isn't it awesome?
Dude, that thing, I'm hoping my BlackBerry gets stuck under the tire of my car tomorrow. And just unfortunately does a burnout on it.
Yeah, right.
I want to get one of those bad, but I'm under contract.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, if BlackBerry gets sued and I have to literally get a new phone somehow.
Yeah, but they're not going anywhere. They have too big of a subscriber base, but, you know.
Well, you know what? After I saw your phone, I'm hoping they get sued. Well,
this thing's amazing. And, you know, it's through Sprint service, which is okay. But it's funny because as a hobby, sometimes I may accidentally break into unsecured wireless networks via my laptop.
Yeah,
maybe reconfigure some routers, but now it's funny. This phone is is wireless enabled, and I'm sitting here in my office picking up my surfing the webs over my neighbor's unsecured access points. So it's just an amazing phone. So if anybody's got a lot of money to waste on a phone, I need it for work, definitely. This is the phone to get until it breaks down.
The funny thing that when I met you and you taught me one thing is that I had got rid of my wireless connection because of you. I wired my whole house. I didn't care what holes I had to drill into this old house.
Driving around in my mobile lab with the antennas sticking out in the back of my Yukon, right?
Yeah, people think wireless rules, but I don't know.
If you don't set it up right, people remember this. You're in big trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Big trouble.
But that's for some other podcast, though.
Yeah, that's for the Leo Laporte Security Now podcast.
Exactly.
You can go listen to that awesome podcast. So anyway, do you have anything else to say before we get started with the phone interview that Al and I did with Pam?
Well, actually, I got a sneak preview of the phone interview with Pam and Al.
What'd you think?
It was very entertaining. Mm-hmm. I think actually it was very humorous. I was very amazed that I wasn't there to crack any jokes. And I must have laughed out loud at least three or four times, so it was fantastic.
Yeah. What did you think of the content, though?
Oh, the content was amazing. I even told you before that I had questions that I would love to ask Pam about.
Well, next time we talk to her, if you can definitely ask the questions. We'll probably be checking in with her in about 3 or 4 weeks.
It's a very enjoyable. It's going to be a very enjoyable podcast after we shut up.
So let's just do that. Let's shut our mouths, and we will. We're filming a ghost story episode for Fangoria TV this Saturday in Brooklyn, which is why we're doing the podcast a little early this week. Because Friday night we got to pack up all the gear, and we're not going to have time to podcast. So it's a little early this week, and next week. We'll be back on Wednesday night because we're scheduled to do the joint podcast, and then probably the week after that we'll be back on Friday nights.
Sounds good to me.
All right, man. I will see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. So everybody enjoy the three-way interview and have a good night.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
All right, later.
Hey, this is Brian from Hometown Tales, and I'm afraid of ghosts.
Yes, he is. I'm a little bit skeptical, as Garrett likes to say. It's Gene and Brian from the Hometown Tales podcast, letting everyone know that you're listening to the Haunted New Jersey podcast, which we enjoy because they really research things and we just make fun of things.
That's what we do.
Yeah. All right. Hope you like it. We do. See ya.
See ya.
Okay, so we're here with Al Rauber. Al is talking to us via Skype from Pittsburgh. Al, how you doing?
Good.
It's been
Miracle
a while.
Of electronics and computers.
Yeah, I know. It's nice, isn't it?
It's fantastic. You know, it's funny because I just heard about Skype from a customer of mine in Greece.
Okay.
And he was saying, hey, you guys should have Skype. You know, you can conference call any place in the world. You know,
right.
I got to look into this. You know, and then the next day you sent me an email about
Skype. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get around to installing it for a while. I finally did it last week because, now we can interview all our friends all over the world. So it'll be nice. And it's cheap, too.
And it's a great tool.
It is, definitely. So what have you been up to? You been traveling?
I've been traveling just in the U.S. I was in Virginia for a week. I want to go down to Virginia. We have for my real job, for work. We have a warehouse down in the Newport News area, so I usually spend a number of days down there every year.
Yeah. And you're going to Malta soon, right?
2 weeks. I leave for Malta. Yeah. I have a big sales conference in Malta, so I'll be there. And I don't know where else right now because we've got an issue out in Guam, and I'm trying to get somebody out there, and I'm hoping I don't have to go.
Right, yeah. A couple podcasts ago, we talked about when the two of us went down to that Haunted Hollywood video.
Yeah, that came out well, actually. I listened to the podcast.
Okay.
It was pretty good. I mean, you pretty much described it, right? Everything you would see, I haven't heard anything back from the
people. No, we gave them our number, but, they didn't call us back. And the regional manager for that Hollywood video wasn't really too crazy about the stories about the haunting, so I don't think that they're going to really, you know, pursue it. I don't think they're going to really want to make a big deal and have us back in, which is a shame, but, you know, because of the apparitional sightings that have been observed there.
They're used to it, right? I mean, you know, we're used to that.
Yeah, I know. It happens all the time.
Get into a public place and they don't want, you know, they don't want the stories about their haunting to get out, thinking it's going to somehow
hurt their business.
Or something, instead of what we found, instead of, you know, bringing more people into the place.
No, it's true. I mean, we've got that great restaurant in Basking Ridge. I'm not going to name the name, but, you know, we try to do a show in there, and, you know, they do a lot of weddings there. It's an upscale place, really old Revolutionary War era building, and there apparently is a child ghost in there, and they just would not let us in. I've been in there, you know, off the record, because the manager, I'm friendly with there, but the big manager, his boss said no way. So it's unfortunate, you know, because you've got these great cases in these very historic, beautiful buildings, and they just don't want the publicity. And we find that in Cape May, too, in some cases.
Cape May, but, you know, the one that really jumps out is Allaire Village.
Oh, yeah, they don't want the publicity anymore, right?
Place, you know, with some haunted, you know, especially one particular haunted building. And, I mean, those people change daily and whether they want somebody
right.
They don't want publicity or not. I mean, they... At one point in time, when I went down there...
Where is that in Jersey? What town?
Farmingdale.
Farmingdale? That's like,
yeah,
like central Jersey.
Towards, it's like on the way to Point Pleasant area.
Okay.
And it's an old historic... what Allaire is, basically, is it's the poor man's Batstow. I mean, it was it was an iron ore village, but a much poorer grade of iron ore.
Okay.
And it's found down in Batstow.
And you're talking, what, 18th or 19th century?
Yeah, I'm talking 1800s, I'm talking.
Okay.
Yeah, so 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the, it was just a full city. It was a full, you know, the church and stores and, you know, schoolhouse and everything. It was like a working village is basically what it was. And I remember the first time I went there, you know, when we uncovered something in the visitor center, of the village, and when I got back to the people, and they had asked me in, when I got back to them and told them about what we came up with, it was like they didn't want to hear it, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, don't say anything, you know, which I still.
It's amazing because, you know, it's all fun and games until you find something or you record voices in there.
And they don't ask
you back; they get freaked.
Right. And but then about 4 years later, they asked me to be their guest speaker at their annual. I don't know what it was, fundraising dinner or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I went down and I spoke, and they had a whole different group of officers, you know, and then it was like, come in anytime you want, you know, or, you know, we'd love to have you come back, you know.
And now they don't want us back anymore.
Yeah, and then when I called them a year later, they had another change of heart,
right.
And they didn't want to have, you know, they didn't want anybody here again. So, and you know, whatever, I don't care, it doesn't bother.
Because there's always, you know, dozens of places to investigate.
Yeah.
That reminds me also of the Morristown Historical Society, which is not far from here in Morristown, New Jersey, you know. Depending on who's running the show at the time, they're very open about the haunting there, or
right.
Very close-lipped.
Right, you're right.
So,
yeah, remember, Acorn Hall?
Acorn Hall.
That's you know,
it's the head of, Morris County, that's a Morris County Historical Society, right?
Yeah,
it's their headquarters.
They wanted, you know, at one time they didn't want any publicity about the stuff, and then next thing you know, they're like telling everybody about the ghost, you know,
mm-hmm.
And then I guess you had gone down there later.
I was there with my, I took my nephew there because I wanted to talk to someone to find out what was going on, and we took the tour, I paid for the tour, this is like in 2000, and, you know, I took the guide aside afterwards, and I said, you know, this is who I am, and this is what I do, and he said, oh, he goes, and he took me into a back room, my nephew, and he said, yeah, this is going on, that's going on, he goes, but the, you know, the current head of the Historical Society has told us, do not say anything to anybody about it, so it was all very off the record. I don't know if, you know, they seem to come and go pretty quickly in these different historical societies. So you never know. 1 year, you might be able to get in. The next year, you're told, you know, take off, get lost.
That's right.
So, but
it's crazy like that.
Yeah. So when are you going to be back in Jersey? In March?
You know what? I may not be back in Jersey until May.
Okay.
I'm not sure right now.
Well, it doesn't matter since we can call you and we can discuss.
Yeah, we could hook up like this.
Yeah, we could do this. And we'll probably check in with you maybe every week or every other week and just see what's going on. But in a few minutes, we're going to conference call with our good friend Pamela Heath, who's a parapsychologist out in California and works closely with, you know, Lloyd Auerbach, our friend, and a couple other people.
Maybe I have to talk to her again. Haven't
yeah.
Well, I haven't talked to her physically for years, a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. I talked to her about 3 or 4 months ago, but, you know, mostly I keep in touch with her, you know, via email. So I'll tell you what, why don't we take a break for a minute, and then we will give Pam a call, and we'll do a nice interview with her and catch up.
Sounds great.
Okay.
No folklore. No fairy tales. No fantasies. These stories are true.
This is Al Rauber, and I've investigated over 1,000 haunting cases throughout the U.S. and England. Cape May seems to have an overabundance of past inhabitants refusing to leave. As beautiful as Cape May is, who could blame them?
The New York Times exclaims, Cape May is such a hotbed of paranormal activity, and Al Rauber's tour is among the most popular around. The Lower Township Gazette writes, this is a tour that everyone who visits Cape May has to go on. 7 Mile Times prints, stories are based upon true, real-life experiences in 28 years of research, not fantasy.
That's the original Haunted Cape May tour. For tickets, please call 609-463-8834.
Okay, so we're back, and on the line is Al Rauber from Pittsburgh and our good friend Pamela Heath from Alameda, California. Pam, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Good to hear from you and Al again.
Yeah, Al, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. It's always nice to talk to Pam.
Yeah. We haven't all talked for quite some time. And I guess, Pam, last time we saw you is when we were out for the PROS conference, right? What year was that?
2000.
Was it 2000 already?
2000. No. I think it was 2000.
Yeah, 2000. It's been 5 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Has it been that long?
I guess so.
Wow.
Yeah. So what's up? Is Lloyd planning on having another PROS conference this year? Do you know, or am I putting you on the spot?
He is hoping to do one this summer, but okay. We don't have the details yet. Although I can tell you, it'll probably be in the Bay Area since Lloyd and I are both out.
Yeah, right.
We get the benefit of that.
Yeah. And where was it last time? In Oakland?
It was actually in Concord.
Concord, okay.
But it'll be in the Bay Area, and it wouldn't surprise me. He has to get some good hotel deals, so it's a little cheaper there.
It would be nice to see everybody from around the country again, you know. For those who don't know, Al, why don't you explain what PROS is?
Paranormal Research Organization. It's a group that, I guess, was Lloyd the brainchild of the whole thing, I think?
Lloyd and I are technically co-founders.
Okay.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess Pam would be better to explain, but it's basically a group of us, I guess, that were cordially invited to attend this meeting, and I have to say it was a real honor to be invited.
It was, yes.
Yeah, it's still by invitation only.
Yeah, and
I don't know how much your listeners want to hear that.
Oh, they do want to hear that, because...
It's by invitation only.
Yeah.
But it's for people who are seriously interested in ghost investigation and who have a certain standard of practice, that not only do they do investigations in a scientific way, shall we say, but they also care about the people they're trying to help. Because sometimes you'll see people go in, and I won't name names.
Ghost hunters.
I'm not naming names.
Okay.
And these people go in and they'll get these, you know, supposed phenomena,
mm-hmm.
and then they just leave. And they don't help the people at all. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not ethical.
And they got orbs and swirling vortex. And
we aren't going there.
Okay. Al and I will take care of that once you leave.
I have strong feelings about orbs that I think are matched only by Al. You have very similar feelings.
It seems like every time we have a podcast, we end up with this subject. So let's try to stay away from it.
All right. No orb discussion tonight. So, Pam, why don't you give us a little background let us know a little bit more about you and the work that you do out there.
Absolutely. I originally am a physician. I got my training at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston, on Galveston Island. And then practiced in anesthesia for a number of years until I started having psychic experiences of my own, which was kind of freaky to have start happening when you're in your 30s.
Right.
You don't really expect that. And I was fortunate at the time I was working in Orlando, Florida, and that's a half hour south of Casadega, which is a spiritualist camp. And I was really skeptical, so I was really careful to find a psychic who would not be able to give me a cold reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't give them my last name. I didn't wear any jewelry. I had plain clothing. I wasn't going to tell them anything.
Right.
You know, and just see what they got. And this guy leans out the door, and he goes, "Oh, come in. You really are psychic. You're not going crazy. We have lots to talk about." He ushered me, and I'm like, okay, he's the real deal. And I ended up getting training for 6 months from his foster sister, who is a spiritualist healer.
Okay.
Charged $4 a lesson.
Well, that's pretty cheap.
They were not in it for the money.
Yeah.
And then I was having my abilities grow a little faster than my shielding, and I found it was getting just too unpleasant to be in Orlando. So I decided to follow a long-standing dream of mine and went off to the Navajo Reservation for 2 years.
Okay.
And I worked in the heart of the Navajo Reservation, and it gave me some time to really build my shield so I could block people out.
Okay.
And it also let me spend a lot of time in meditation and continue to sort of develop. And then I read Lloyd Auerbach's book, ESP Hauntings and Poltergeists.
Yes.
At the first, I realized that there really was parapsychology in the United States. You didn't have to go to Russia for it.
It's the same with me. And I was about 18 when that book came out. And I, you know, I had been reading ghost books and this and that. But that was the first really scientific book that ever came out. And that was the basis of my, you know, work.
And so I tracked down the current program, which then was at Rosebridge, and I moved to California just to study parapsychology. And I graduated after 4 years with a doctorate in psychology, specializing in parapsychology. That's a PsyD, parapsychology.
Right.
And I'd worked with John Klimo, who's the world's expert on channeling, and who I have a book coming out with soon.
Yeah, we want to talk about that.
Worked with Lloyd, worked with Alan Vaughn, who is considered one of the world's top 100 psychics. And I worked with Jerry Salfin, who's a great guy, statistician. So I had a lot of parapsychologists who trained me.
Okay.
And then out of that came my book, The PK Zone, which was actually a more readable version of my dissertation. And
What year did that come out?
It actually was officially released in 2003.
Okay.
And actually was just called by Rhea White, "If you can only buy one book on PK, this is the most important one." Talk about a great...
That's review. An honor.
Right.
Well, it covers everything about PK, because it starts by talking about the stories, which are very wild, from around the world since the dawn of time in all kinds of cultures. And then it talks about all the experimental research up until about 2000, because it does need updating now. And then the last third is what the experience is like for those who do it.
And what about the book you're working on now?
That is called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife.
Okay.
And that also came out of a discussion that John and I had when he was the head of the parapsychology program. And I spent many hours in his office being counseled, as every grad student is. And he talked one time about how he had been assigned to put together information about what it's like for suicides in the afterlife by a psychologist who had a suicidal client. And it was his belief, and I have to agree with this, that if this woman knew what she was getting into, she wouldn't commit suicide.
And what was she getting into?
Well, if you're a traditional suicide and you commit, and you know, you take your own life, these people often have a lot of difficulty making their transition in the afterlife. And they all pretty much give you the same message, which is to say, don't do it. And as a physician, I'm very big on informed consent.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea of creating this book that really gives people a clear picture of what they're going to deal with in the afterlife would be a great way of giving people who are suicidal informed consent. And also giving comfort to those left behind, because really, they're not stuck there forever. Everyone is forgiven. the big problem they have is they have to forgive themselves. And it's something that even the living have problems with, being able to forgive themselves when you make a mistake or when you've hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah. Yep.
That's hard to do. And it's even harder for them because they're very aware of those who are left behind and the grief of those left behind. And they can see all of a sudden all the ramifications of what they did, and they can't change it. And it can be devastating for them. It can take them a long time to recover, but they do recover eventually. Many regret that they didn't finish what they'd completed, too. There's a lot of regrets. So we talk about a lot of things. We talk about the regrets. We talk about their experiences. But we also talk about what they could recover. But what I like about the book is we chose not to look at just traditional suicide. We also look at assisted suicide.
Oh, interesting.
A hot topic right now in society is it, should it be legal or not? And they do appear to have quite a different situation than the traditional suicides. Very few of them have regrets. They seem to have a much easier transition.
These are for the terminally ill, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the terminally ill. And then the third category is we look at suicide bombers, and they were kind of a boom. Because, as you already know, Alan Garrett, personalities don't change in the afterlife. These guys are just as argumentative in death as they were in life, and they don't want to admit they were wrong. They will dance around the topic, and you'll go like, okay, did you get your virgins? And it's like, well, things aren't like we expected.
Like, yeah, there's no virgins over there, right?
They're not.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. It's a great book. It's going to be out in April from North Atlantic Books. I noticed Amazon already has it available for
A
hefty discount, 32% off.
Wow.
You can get it for $14.93 if you order ahead.
Well, I want an autographed copy, so I'm going to get that right from you, I think.
You know you're going to get that
from me. Have to bring it out with you.
Yeah, right.
If you want information on this stuff, by the way, you can go to my website at www.pamelaheath.com. And it also has a lot of my papers because, you know, I've been working a lot on place memory recently.
Oh, yeah. Well, why don't you talk to us about that a little bit, because that's definitely an interesting topic.
Well, Al is not getting a word in. Well, place memory.
That's it. I'm listening. I haven't heard. Wow.
You have to understand that living people release energy, especially when they're experiencing a traumatic or emotional event. This energy can be recorded by the environment. And some people who are sensitive to this information, like psychics, can then pick up on or read these impressions of past events and feelings that have been stored in objects, buildings, and the environment. Now, what makes it interesting from an EVP researcher's viewpoint is it looks like sometimes EVPs can be of place memory.
We agree with you, right, Al?
So yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's common or it's the large percentage, but there have been cases where you can actually hear past events.
And, if you listened, and I know you did, to the Talking Walls tapes I played a few podcasts.
Yeah, that's great.
That was stimulated. That was like place memory energy, EVP, stimulated by 50,000, 60,000 volts of electricity.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed, I worked with a psychic at one point who, it seemed like when there was that type of a haunting, like a place memory type of a haunting, she was good. She would pick up the entire, everything that associated, the emotions, the whole event. She would be able to feed back the whole event. But for anything else, she really couldn't do anything. wasn't much.
Understand, with any kind of psychic ability, what you're good at depends on what interests you.
Yeah.
So some people, they're really, I can't pick up on place memory at all.
Oh, you can't?
I have, a little bit, okay, if it's really strong. But by and large, I deliberately tune it out. I want to know if it's old stuff because it's not important to me. It's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
What I care about is when there are ghosts or stuck beings, whatever, that need help. That to me is more important, just like it's more important to help the living. I'm more worried about helping those who need help than I am about old information that to me, unless I'm trying to solve a crime or something, doesn't really matter.
But do you think that has left to do with your schooling and your background as a physician?
No, it seems to be interest. It seems to be a matter of, and I've seen this so often. For example, when I was taking call, one of the reasons I realized I was psychic was I could tell you exactly what kind of case I was going to do at what hour of the night as an emergency.
Hmm.
So I could say, at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to do an emergency OB-GYN case. Gee, it's 7, I'd better go to bed early tonight. And I get a call at 1:45 in the morning. And I was consistent. I was really good. But now that I don't take call anymore, I can't tell you what's going to happen. I can't pick up on it because it's not important to me anymore.
Okay.
So abilities can change. So what you'd have to understand about that psychic is if she was motivated on an unconscious level to pick up on ghosts, she probably could. You know.
A while back, you and I had gotten an email conversation that you were going to. You had asked me if we had any experience with EVP experience with suicide victims, which I hadn't. Al, you haven't, had you, that you know of?
Not that I know of.
Okay. I mean, they didn't come right out and tell us. But a lot of times with EVP, as you know, you don't get a whole lot of information.
There are some. We do actually mention EVPs several times in our book on suicide. We have EVPs from Konstantin Radev.
Okay.
How do you pronounce his name?
Radiva.
Radiva.
Sorry.
Whatever. We also have him from George Meeks because he did tremendous amount of work.
Who did he come through to?
A bunch of different people. He summarized a lot of things in the After We Die, What Then?
Okay.
There was also Mark Macy, I think.
Oh, right, Mark. Yeah.
They mentioned suicide. So
okay.
We actually did bring in EVP stuff because to me that is a form of mediumship.
Mm-hmm.
I won't call it quite the same as channeling because with a channel normally consciousness, your consciousness has to step aside and you let another being, generally one hopes a discarnate entity, step in and temporarily borrow your body to speak.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because, you know, I'm not psychic and Al's not psychic. And we work with, you know, electronic instrumentation
right.
for our work. But we've kind of, I mean, I've been talking a lot about this direct radio voice ITC
yes.
lab I'm setting up.
Yes.
And people who listened to the last two podcasts for the Meeks, George Meek tapes with the Spiricom device, and William O'Neill, that, you know, was his assistant, was a psychic. So I think that, you know, if you're talking about regular direct voice with a regular medium, and then you're talking about direct radio voice with someone like me manning the equipment, there's got to be some kind of psychic connection there that allows them to come through. And Annabella Cordoso out in Spain, who's helping me, she says the same thing, and they tell her this. You know, there's a psychic bond between the recorder on this plane and them. So
yeah, but it may make you feel better to know that your psychic abilities are always getting stronger as you get older, especially into the 50s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So you may be getting better as a psychic, and I'll tell you the other thing that's interesting, is there seems to be a bit of a contagious effect to being psychic. So I was talking to Chris Fleming about this recently, who you may know from Dead Famous.
Right.
And if you hang out with a psychic, you know, whether me or preferably someone even stronger, it helps sort of turn on your own gift. And I know Lloyd started becoming more psychic or having some experiences after he hung out with Alex Tanis.
Okay.
Who is a very, very gifted psychic in Maine. I got better after hanging out with Stash Margaret Murray.
Okay.
Who's a psychic. So there's something contagious about this. And actually, in the suicide book, some of the things that got channeled, they do talk about the fact that we really affect those around us more than we would think. If you're physically around people, but also if they're simply in your orbit, and even if they're on the planet, that how you are, if you're enlightened, can affect everybody around you. But certainly if it's someone that you deal with on a physical plane level, interact with regularly, you can affect them in positive ways or negative ones.
Yeah, I guess for better or for worse, right?
Yeah, they were saying that's part of why we were seeing that big increase in suicide with the kids shooting.
Oh, right.
Things like that. They were saying it has to do with this contagious quality of thought.
That's interesting.
That's pretty interesting. So they say you sort of have to consciously counterbalance that. But the way I've seen it also is with psychics, and other parapsychologists have noticed that too. You hang out with gifted psychics, you're going to become more psychic yourself.
Just to get off on another topic briefly,
Yep. You
had mentioned Chris Fleming, who I'm going to hopefully call soon and interview. Chris is a great guy.
Yeah.
You just filmed an episode with him of Dead Famous,
didn't
you?
I did. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I was down in L.A. and still filmed a Rita Hayworth episode, which is part of the third season. The Biography Channel on Tuesday nights is airing Dead Famous.
Right.
And they are mixing up all the episodes, first, second, and third season. So it's a real mishmash if you don't know belongs to what season it could be.
The first two seasons were UK only, weren't they?
They were UK only initially, and then the Biography Channel bought them and started airing them together.
Okay.
And the show has continually gotten better. I mean, the third season is better than the second season, which is better than the first season. If you want to sort them out, I think the best thing to do is to go to Chris Fleming's website, which is at www.unknownmagazine.com. And Unknown Magazine is just one word. And then if you go to Investigations, he lists all the Dead Famous episodes, and he gives summaries, and he has EVPs.
Yeah, he's gotten some amazing EVPs, and I don't think he's been recorded for all that long, right?
No, but he's a ghost magnet.
Yeah, it seems it.
Ghosts love his energy, and I can see why. It's really nice energy, but the thing is, he gets incredible EVPs, and they don't even show all of them on the air, so he'll put some of the better ones on his website, too.
Okay, yeah. Definitely go check out unknownmagazine.com. Chris is a wonderful guy.
I think he'll be on in March or something. But it's not February. But I would, the other thing that may be interesting to our listeners is Al and Garrett and Chris and John Klimo, my co-author on the suicide book, are talking about getting together and doing some EVP research of our own out here.
In the Faraday cage.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
it. You know, that's only 8x8. It could be crowded.
It could be. Just make sure everybody showers.
I think with that much talent, we're going to get some great EVPs.
Do you want to
because they follow Chris everywhere.
Do you want to explain what the Faraday cage is? Most people aren't going
to
know.
Basically, to put it simply, it's a room that is shielded against all radio waves.
No.
And it was originally created partly for ESP research. In this case, it's at the Institute of Noetic Sciences because some people thought that ESP was carried by radio waves or low-frequency waves or other things, and they were trying to sort out what would or wouldn't block ESP.
And the biggest, the skeptics, Al, we know this, will say that the EVP we record is nothing other than, you know, simply stray radio waves from radio broadcasts.
You can't get, I don't think you can get cell phone or radio waves or anything in it. That's the whole advantage of
it's shielded, yeah.
Yeah, but there are plenty of people that haven't done any reading, you know, haven't done any of the readings.
Well, they haven't
checked into, like, Radovid's experiments.
They don't care.
The other experiments later on, how they've used Faraday cages and they've used things to block all types of interference.
We won't be the first to use it, though. I want to mention that Alexander McRae has done some studies.
He did
a study at the Faraday cage out in Noetic Sciences that just recently got published in the Society for Psychical Research in 2005.
Okay. Is he from Scotland, or is he an American?
I think he's from Scotland.
I'm pretty sure he is, too, because he's a member of the AAEVP.
Yeah, he had to look hard for a place that had a Faraday cage that he could use. But what he did is he did get what sounded like paranormal voices. Now, you still can't say what the source of those voices are. You can't say if it's human PK or discarnate PK or both of them working together. A PK, by the way, mind over matter. But, you know, it's something paranormal.
Sure, of course, yeah, it's still paranormal. And, you know, we appreciate you getting us in there because you don't come by a Faraday cage and get an offer like this often. But, Al, why don't you want to talk about I can't pronounce his name. What's his last name?
I'm glad I'm not alone.
Ordinarily, I can pronounce it, but since I got Pam on the line, I can't pronounce it.
I screwed
Rodiva.
She has that effect on you.
Yeah.
Radovay?
Radovay. He's Lithuanian, right?
he's Latvian, actually.
Latvian, I'm sorry. Why don't you talk?
He's pretty much, I think you know, you guys will agree, he's pretty much the, you know, the guru of EVP. I mean, before him, Jorgensen was doing a lot of experiments with it. And before
also,
him,
and Salazé, I think.
And Vanzelay and who was it that he was working with at the time? They were also during in the '50s getting these voices. But Radovay was actually a like a protege of Jorgensen.
Right. Yes.
And
yes.
That's how he came into it, and he pretty much took it, you know, miles further than Jorgensen ever did. But I've read some things that actually date this back to like the 30s and 40s in Australia. They were coming up with things
if you read Tom and Lisa Butler's book, There Is No Death and There Is No Dying, they're the heads of the AAEVP. It goes back even a little earlier than that, too.
It goes back at least to 1901.
Yeah, it's about 100 years.
On a phonograph record.
Exactly, and they touch on that. Pam, did you read that book, their book?
I have ordered it.
Okay, yeah, it's a really good book, but they... You know, they go way back to the beginning of this phenomena, and it started around 1900.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I will bet you anything it started before then. We just haven't caught it yet.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think this is new.
Well, I think the thing with why Radovay is pretty much why he jumped right to the forefront in the field is because at the time he had the assistance of a lot of the really well-known scientists throughout the world. They'd gotten the interest, he'd gotten them interested in this, and he was getting confirmations on this stuff from some really great people like Bender and some of these other people, you know, who, and including the Vatican.
The Vatican.
And said, yeah, there's something to this. And they actually, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but the Vatican actually taught a course or a class in EVP. There's a high school there in Vatican City where they actually, at one point in time, taught a class in EVP.
And you're going back, was this in the 50s or 60s?
In the 60s.
And what was who was the Pope? The Pope at the time had befriended him, and they were actually very close, I think.
I don't know, but I know that he had representatives there. And that's probably the most skeptical organization in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what makes me laugh sometimes when you hear people from these skeptical organizations, or like this this young lady who decided to write that article about me, and said that there was no voice on her tape when, you know, 50,000 people heard the same tape and heard the voice. You know,
literally.
I mean, it's so easy just to say, you know,
that was
kind
of my problem with Barris's failure to replicate electronic voice phenomena. You know, he did a recent study that
was
cited for scientific exploration. Barus. He's also the same nationality as Radovay was.
Okay, Latvian.
And he said that he didn't get voices on tape. But if you read what he got voices and sounds on tape. He just didn't. He didn't say that he was positive because he had to have 100% of everybody agree that the exact same thing was said. You know,
you don't even
get that with human voices on a telephone. I mean, why would you get that with paranormal voices? So
You're right.
He says it failed. It sounds like he had some very successful paranormal voices, but he called.
You're right. Barry Garrett and I will sometimes go, you know, listen to a tape that we bring back from an investigation and come up with two different things, but we know it's a voice. You know, it's definitely a voice. It's just
Chris and I don't always agree on the EVP either, but sometimes they're very clear and everybody agrees.
Yes.
Go ahead.
My first EVP was obvious to me, and it was obvious to John Kleeman, it was obvious to Lloyd Auerbach, and there was a fourth person there who said she just thought it was an animal noise.
Okay.
You know, so it's really interesting that some people can't hear it, and I wonder how much of it has to do with what your mind can accept.
It's possible because I've had that experience as many times where, you know, clearly to three or four of us, it's three specific words.
A class A.
Yeah, and then other people say, well, I hear it, but they say something completely different than what everybody else is hearing.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's cognitive dissonance.
It also depends on the medium that you're listening it through. I mean, if you listen to your tape, you know, an audio tape, and you hear a voice one way, but once it goes through the computer, you hear something different.
Yeah, and we can really do a lot with the voices nowadays. I mean, as far as raising and cleaning them up, the Class C, the lower voices, you know.
Right. But you still run into problems then with people saying, well...
It's edited.
And you're making it isn't there. With a Class A, it's nice because you haven't necessarily done anything to the voice, other than maybe if you've reversed it or something like that.
Right. Sometimes we have to do that because they'll come in backwards. But Al, why don't you talk about the experiment in the ocean?
Well, that's another... Yeah, we were having a good time with that the other day, too. No, it's something where I'd read, and I was looking around at his book just before we started talking here, and I browsed through it, but I just couldn't find it. But I don't remember if I read it in his book or read it later when someone was talking about some of the early experiments that he was doing, and one of them they talked about was actually sealing a recorder in a waterproof carton or container and dropping it to the ocean floor and picking it up, you know, a half hour later and there's voices on it.
Mm-hmm.
And two things. One of the reasons that he was doing that at the time, his ideal, he always said his ideal recording place would be the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you know, at the ocean's bottom floor, because then there's definitely no radio waves that will interfere.
I'm not sure that's true.
Not nowadays. Yeah.
Well, not nowadays, sure, with all the, you know, submarines and things under there, too, right? But that was, you know, what he used to say. But I was talking about how I would love to duplicate that experiment. And, I mean, we don't have to get as crazy as the ocean floor. I mean, all we need to do is seal a tape recorder in a waterproof container and drop it in a bathtub or something, you know. But my thing with that is, why would these spirits, right, why would they come through on an ocean floor? People don't live on the ocean floor.
Well, yeah.
I'm not convinced that he was getting spirits, I got to say.
What do you think?
I think there's a lot of sounds down in the ocean, and I think you can sound, you know, when you're, especially if you're going to manipulate the tape a little bit, which you often do when you're trying to bring out EVPs, you can make it sound like something that, you know, wasn't...
Right, and we've never heard these things.
Yeah, I've never heard them.
You hear whales, you hear dolphins, I mean, there's all kinds of noises down there. It's not silent by any means.
Well, again, it's like I tell...
I'm not convinced that it shields totally from radio waves.
It's like I tell our listeners all the time that are skeptical or kind of poo-poo what we do. I don't know why they listen, but some of them do. You know, you got to go out and try it for yourself, because you really have no room to talk or criticize anyone until you've actually put in the time to do the research. You know.
Yeah, but Gary, now you're also forgetting the other possibility, which is that they are real EVP voices, but they're entirely PK by the experimenter.
And you know what? I swear to you that with the tens of thousands of hours that I've done this over the years.
No, I mean the ones on the ocean floor.
Well, I'm just saying, generally, when we go out, I have recorded voices that only show up on one recording device, and it sounds very much like my voice. I've recorded voices when Al is talking and saying something, a voice will come on. Remember at the Colonial House, Al? And it says in the first person, Al was talking about, you know, the haunting phenomenon that goes on there, and a male voice comes on and says, I was looking for proof. Remember that, Al?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I think that, you know, it was speaking in the first person, and sometimes I think that, you know, it sounds like my voice. It's a little garbled, like EVP-ish. But, you know, I don't doubt that some of it's caused by PK, you know. But
yeah, and I have to say, though, I do kind of doubt. I know another theory is that it's sub-vocal, you know, that you're actually vocalizing it, sort of saying it under your breath. I don't really buy that one.
I don't, but I don't know enough about the human body, you know, to really say one way or the other.
But it's certainly something that, you know, some people would put forth, like magicians and things, you know, like, who are, you know, skeptical.
Like what magicians? You want to name any names?
Not on
I can think of one.
No, I don't want
all right, we won't say anything.
Now, there's no point giving them...
ammunition. Pam, what's going on the USS Hornet?
Well, I love the Hornet. I know you've been out there. Al, have you ever visited?
Yeah, when we were there for the PROS conference, we did that investigation there.
It is aircraft carrier, which has been turned into a museum ship. And it was originally built during World War II and was actually one of the most, I'd like to say famous, certainly one of the most successful aircraft carriers. For a while, it was the only one, I think for like 18 months, it was out to sea because it was the only aircraft carrier in the Pacific holding the line against the Japanese.
After Pearl Harbor, you're right.
So they had all kinds of records of most planes shot down and stuff like that because they were the only one.
Ones,
there was
yeah.
competition.
But now it's in Alameda?
It's in Alameda. It's a museum ship. You're free to visit. Tuesdays, they have part of the ship closed down, but they're always looking for volunteers to help restore the ship. And I do work as a volunteer on the ship, and I've done a lot of hours painting. And there are a ton of ghosts there, and there's actually different kinds of spirits there. I shouldn't say they're just ghosts, because the ship herself has a spirit.
Hmm.
And then you have ghosts that appear to have come back to help the ship turn into a museum, and will literally do things like materialize chain when needed.
Hmm.
You have also some stuck spirits, what I'd call earthbound, who haven't quite realized they're dead. But it's an interesting place, because most of the ghosts are pretty friendly,
and they
know each other exists, so they're not bored or unhappy like most ghosts.
Yeah, right. They're all sailors that served on the ship during the war, right?
No.
Okay.
No, they come back for the same reasons the docents and volunteers come back, because they simply love the ship, and a lot of them never served on the ship.
Okay.
Certainly the vast majority never died on the ship.
Right.
They liked the military life,
mm-hmm.
and they're drawn back. I've got to say recently, it is also, I guess I'd say several months ago, I noticed the ghosts seem to be using the place as a staging area for helping spirits that were newly dead, military spirits newly dead, transition to the afterlife, putting them in a sort of more comfortable environment. But it's an interesting place, because some days you'll go there and it'll feel empty. And other days you go there and it'll feel really full, like Pearl Harbor Day.
Yeah.
I've never felt it so crowded. It felt like there were literally hundreds and hundreds of ghosts. And then I was on the ship Saturday, and it was the same thing again. I was like, there had to be an anniversary of some kind, because there were all these ghosts in white uniforms with their duffel bags all over the hangar bay.
Wow.
And when I checked in the history book that's called The Gray Ghost, the story of the aircraft carrier Hornet, it was the exact anniversary of the day they renamed the ship the Hornet.
Oh.
It had been the Kearsarge before, and the Hornet, the predecessor to this Hornet, had been sunk.
Okay.
And that was the day they officially renamed this ship to the Hornet. It's really wild.
Well, have there been any apparitional sightings on board lately? Because I know from time to time they have them.
It seems to be a daily thing.
Oh,
now,
really?
They won't always see a full apparition. They may see it from the waist up or the waist down, which freaks some people out.
And this is the staff of the museum?
Oh, constantly. They have objects moving, too. They'll have, like, objects fly across a room.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll have things disappear from one room and appear like the length of the ship later, like coffee pots.
It's
a very active place.
Are any sections more active than other sections?
Yes. The junior officers board is really active. The forecastle is often very active, although some of that stuff may not be ghost activity. There may be some plasma stuff going on, which is sort of a natural electromagnetic phenomenon. The hangar bay can be very active. The bathrooms can be very active. And the staterooms are very active. Especially, I've heard a lot of stories recently about the Marines, but all the staterooms can be pretty active because, you know, almost all the time you'll hear people who go to bed and then some ghost lays down on them or tries to pull them out of their bunk. But I think part of it is that as you're going off to sleep and as you're waking up, you become more psychic. Those are naturally more psychic states. And so people trying to sleep are more tuned into the ghosts and what's going on. I've had people that actually saw the whole room change around them, and they saw how it looked in the 40s.
It's like a time slip.
Really wild.
They get them in Gettysburg, apparently. Have you ever had any... Have you seen any apparitions on board? Or Lloyd? Either one of you?
I have not seen an apparition. I've talked to ghosts a fair bit,
okay,
but I haven't seen them with my eyes.
Okay. Like, neither have we. When, what was the deal with the bathroom there? Because I remember the bathrooms were particularly active.
The women's bathroom, yeah, there were a couple guys that really liked to be there. But, you know, those ghosts seem to have moved over to the junior officers' board.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're over there now. I guess they got bored with the bathroom. Mm. That got old after 3 or 4 or 5 years. Funny. No, they're still around. Interesting place.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And when we went there, I think probably the day we went there it didn't seem like there was much going on when we were there. But just to go there, and
it's awesome.
A historical, mm-hmm, purpose rather than a ghostly visit. You know, I mean, to go there for historical reasons, it's such a great place to go.
The ghosts are also protective of the ship too, and there are a lot of stories about if someone tries to steal from the ship, they'll follow that person and haunt them until they return it.
Oh, really?
And stuff like that. Yeah, they're protective of the ship. But I've enjoyed them. They seem to look at most of the volunteers as if we're fellow crew.
How often are you there? Once a week?
It not that often now.
Are you doing
more work as a doc? But I was working, two, three times a week for a while.
And so, you go in as a volunteer, and you also go in as a parapsychologist too.
Yeah, officially I haven't gone in as a parapsychologist in a few years. Officially, mm-hmm, I go in as a volunteer, but the ghosts like to talk to me, and
mm-hmm,
sometimes they get rather chatty. And I was keeping track of some of the stories for a while, which may or may not eventually become something that the Hornet will sell to make some funds to help support the ship.
Okay. Is Lloyd doing any work on there anymore or not?
Not right now.
No.
They have a political situation that changes
yeah,
time to time. And
we were just talking about them before. Seems like a lot of these public places, these museum and historical societies, have these political issues from time to time.
Prince is in charge at the time.
Yep, it does.
Yeah, it just varies, and I'm not too worried about it. It's interesting because sometimes the ghosts show up at my place to complain if they don't like,
mm-hmm,
what's going on. It's like, what do you think I'm
going to
do about it?
Yeah.
You know?
let's go south a little bit. What about, have you ever had the opportunity to go on Queen Mary?
I have not. Now, no. I know Chris did an episode on that, and they got some interesting stuff on video.
And Bill Roll recorded some EVP there, like place memory EVP, didn't he?
You know, he had set up a recorder, in the depths of the of the ship with your
the engine
with
room.
Friend there, Tony Cornell, was there too.
Okay.
Chris got a little girl singing.
Hmm.
Oh, did he?
In the pool room. Yeah. It was interesting.
Well, that's what Peter James, remember Peter James picked up that little girl too.
Yeah, Peter James was with him on that episode.
Okay.
He picked up that little girl.
They had something on video that I can't quite explain. It looked like it had a shadow.
Wow.
We're
hoping to have Peter on a future show also,
yes,
by the way. I was there one time, but not in any capacity of paranormal. I was there, mm-hmm, actually because we had had a warehouse out in that area, and I had to visit one time, and decided, mm-hmm, to stop in, into the ship. And it's just a fantastic old story. You know, it brings back when you're watching TV and you're watching some of the movies from the 30s, and when everything was basically ship travel overseas to Europe and stuff, and you could see how gaudy it was back then, and how the rich people lived.
Well, you can certainly see why the ghosts would come back there.
Yeah.
I get sort of amused that all these people spend all this time in cemeteries, because generally speaking, ghosts hang out where they had a good time. So you see them in bordellos, you see them, in bathrooms,
Right, where they live, that's what we keep saying, not where they
live, where they had a good time, where they
got
to hang out with people they liked,
I got a CD, from some woman recently of a CD full of pictures taken in a cemetery.
Oh, here we
go. Unexplained stuff, And the unexplained stuff is so so simply explained that, when I went back to her, I said, I'm really sorry, you don't have anything on here. I would consider her to be paranormal. She's got a lot of, bugs, flying around.
Yeah.
You get mad, you should get really mad with
yeah.
yourself.
Did she get mad?
Well, one big thing that these people do, too, that they don't realize is a lot of times they're not steady, you know, with the camera, and there'll be a light someplace, and, you know, suddenly they'll have a streak in the picture, and it's bad.
Point light source. Yeah.
When you're in the dark and you're shooting into the dark, and you bounce, you know, with a flash in the middle of the night, especially in a cemetery, you know what a lot of those granite tombstones, they'll bounce back all kinds of light.
Right.
Or
bugs
you can
flying
get
an around.
Awful wet leaf. I mean, we have a friend Dave Manganelli who I think is going to be on your show later.
Yes.
Who's shown all kinds of pictures. And you can get intriguing reflections just from a wet maple leaf 30 feet away.
Yes.
It's totally out of view of your picture.
And you're not going to see it.
The light.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, there's always a light source. I don't care, no matter what you shoot, how dark it is you're shooting into, there has to be a light source for that thing to develop, you know, for something to come out on the, whether it's a digital or film, you know, some type of a light source, and it's got to be there. And I'll say, well, there wasn't any light. Well, there had to be some light, maybe the moon. There had to be some light, you know, there, otherwise you wouldn't get anything.
Right.
Oh, and there has to also, you know, there are just so many ways of getting artifacts with digital.
Yeah, they're susceptible to artifacts.
Oh, yeah,
artifacts,
they're useless, digital cameras.
They're good for documentation purposes, that's it. Yeah. Very convenient.
Yeah, exactly. I know Lloyd still likes it, and I still like to use the
Lloyd calls it the bane of his existence.
The orbs. He calls orbs the bane of his existence.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. But you know what? It's like, no matter how much you talk about it, it's always out there, you know.
It comes back to haunt you.
That's right.
I think, do you remember
the ghost.
Do you remember in the late 19th century all the, you know, the craze of the spiritualist photos or the spirit photos?
Yeah.
And, you know, that were basically just
weren't cleaning the plates in between the photographs.
That or the photographer was simply doing a double exposure, you know.
Sure.
It was a hoax. That's what orbs are going to be in the next 30 years. People are going to look back and say, how could these people think that was a ghost?
I do want to say, though, there is such a thing as thoughtography or psychic photography.
Yes, no, I know about that, and I do understand that. But, no, this is
just
something totally different.
To
yes, go ahead.
It's a bit anomalous photos. Yeah.
The biggest problem, though, that this does, I mean, for people like yourself and Garrett, the biggest problem that it poses is that there's misinformation going around.
A lot of it.
But all of these people, you know, all of these, you know, ghost hunters with a year of experience under their belt who haven't picked up a book on parapsychology in their whole life, you know, who are out there in these TV stations are just, you know, jumping on these people, you know, and that's what gives ammunition to the skeptics.
Well, I think there's more than that that's a problem, though. It's also that they're focusing on the wrong thing. The thing that parapsychologists really want to hear about is people's experiences. Because ultimately, that's what's really important, is how are people experiencing this? Is it causing them problems? You know?
Yeah.
You want to know what's really going on from their viewpoint. And then you can sort out, okay, what's real, what's normal, what's misunderstood, you know, what's misinterpreted. That sort of stuff. But because they're so focused on the orbs, they ignore all the stuff that could be totally meaningful, like the equipment not working, like the batteries draining in 2 seconds every time you put in a front. I mean, I had this the other day on the Hornet. I was going to record. I was on a flashlight tour. That's one of the things I do. I help with is we do these flashlight tours where we go on parts of the ship that the public's not normally allowed. And I was going to record Al, who I work with, who does the tour. Because he has a great spiel. I had a digital voice recorder, and it told me the battery was dead. And I thought, oh, man, you know, because I didn't bring a fresh battery. I get home, and the battery's fine.
Yep. That's happened to us with the cameras, video and film cameras.
It's happened to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things like that, they're very interesting. Tell me about the equipment malfunctions. Tell me about the experiences. You know, don't tell me about the orbs, okay? People need to, it's focusing them away from what's really valuable information, what's valuable evidence, and that's what bothers me.
No, and the general public will lump the ghost hunters in with, you know, people like us, and like Al said, it just gives the skeptics plenty of ammunition to run roughshod over us, you know.
Yeah, they'll do it regardless.
Yeah, that's true. They were doing it 20 years ago.
Anymore.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, I have to admit, I don't advertise myself that much as a psychic. It's mentioned on my website. I don't really push it a lot. I try to come up with a very balanced viewpoint usually when I'm working. I've had people in the Bay Area skeptics try to recruit me because they think I'm a skeptic. And I just find it hysterical. You know, it's like, are you out of your mind?
Well.
But, I don't worry about skeptics, and I don't worry about proof because, you know, you've said this before, I know both of you guys. You know, if you can't even prove that consciousness exists in a body, how are you going to prove it exists without a body?
Good point.
You know, you can't do it. So stop wasting your time and focus on other things.
Well,
there's enough out there to focus on.
No, there's a lot of work to be done.
A lot to be done.
Well, listen, Pam, I wanted to thank you for spending some time with us. And what I want to do is maybe catch up with you, you know, on a biweekly or monthly basis, just check in with you now that we can and see what you're up to. Would that be okay?
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, you know, we'll plan on getting out to see you either at the PROS conference or a separate trip for the Faraday cage and stop by the Hornet.
This summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, one way or the other. Yeah.
Well, great. And, okay, well, you know, thanks for spending time with us. And, Al, thanks, as always. And I'll be in touch with you next week before you go away.
Okay.
Good talking to both of you guys again.
All right. Thanks, Pam.
Great talking to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.